Well, thank you, everyone, and thank you for the opportunity to come and share. I'm Renee Ouellette, and this is my colleague, Marcy Dowd, and the two of us have just kind of taken an active interest in special ed funding and finance over the years, and we don't know why, if we're gluttons for punishment, but we kind of took our act on the road with two of our colleagues and started to try and help directors of special ed and other folks that are working in this area kind of unpack the complexities of the special ed funding formula and some of the challenges that we're facing with the current formula. And then we had an opportunity to speak to the superintendents and other folks up at the MASA conference. And I guess some people thought we knew a little bit, so they asked us to come and share with you. So it's a little intimidating after the last couple of speakers who are very, very wonderfully educated, and we're boots on the ground people, so we'll try to give you that perspective this morning. We are representing the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, MASE, which is also aligned with MASA, and so that's kind of how we got involved in this, and MASE has supported us in bringing this work forward. Today we're gonna really talk and focus on the special ed funding situation at the state level here in Minnesota. We're really not gonna talk about the federal funds or third party funds or other sources of revenue because we really have a short period of time. And also we're gonna be asking you if you are interested to go on your devices and look at your own data as we're moving through this. We have sample data, but it's really often helpful to look at your own data. So if you do have a device and you can get to the MDE website, we'll take you to where we're gonna want you to look, but I just wanna give you a heads up on that. We're also gonna be kinda doing a broad overview, so if you have specific questions about your district or data that you're seeing, we will be around here for lunch, and we're more than happy to meet up with you and talk further about some specific questions, but we'll try to move as quickly as we can through the information. So we have had a major change in the funding formula for special education in the state of Minnesota. Oh, she's getting the clicker. I'm like, what am I doing? What am I doing? And so prior to 2015, we had a formula that looked kind of like what you have up here. And for those of us that have been around a while, which I will claim to be one of those folks, you get really good at telling people 68% of salaries, 52% of contracted services, 47%. And now that has changed dramatically. And so people are still kind of in some of that mindset about, hey, when I hire a special education teacher, I'm gonna get 68% of that teacher's salary reimbursed. You know, there's also proration and some other things that were factors in that. But generally, you know, we had some sense of that. And we also knew that fringe benefits weren't included. But the new formula is very different, so that's why we're gonna try and take you step by step as to how that's affecting some of the decision making that districts have to do. Also, there was excess cost aid. The state of Minnesota recognized that some districts were using large amounts of their general fund to fund the excess cost of special education, so they put in additional legislation that allowed for 75% of the difference between the unreimbursed portion of special education minus 4.36%. So that's just a little bit of the history of where we were, and we're gonna kinda go forward.
Dr. Melcher talked about the task force in 2012, and I had the opportunity to be part of that task force, and I wanna share, he shared some of the outcomes, I wanna share a little bit of the why. Why we decided to look at the special ed funding formula and really develop a comprehensive, equitable formula. We really wanted this new formula, besides the increase in funding, that it was predictable, it's equitable amongst districts, it aligns with general education, and really it's about the students. The old formula was about how you staffed, how your unions negotiated, how adults were paid. The new formula, the why behind a student-based formula, was about the students you serve. What do they need? And so the intent really was a positive intent to align it to students, not adults. As shared by Dr. Melcher, the outcome wasn't exactly what we predicted, and so there was a lack of funding to support the full transition to a student-based funding formula. And I know that at the ninth hour, maybe the 10th or whatever that would be, Dr. Melcher was running scenarios and options, because it was really important that we moved forward with some of the governor's recommendations, as well as that extra funding in special education. You didn't want to give that up. And so it's important to know that with this change also came aid that was talked about, and that was really important to help start addressing the cross subsidies in the state of Minnesota.
So what we're going to do is just take a quick second. If you do want to look at your own data, we're going to take you to a particular report we want to go through. It'll be up here and in your packets, but your electronics materials, but if you want to look at your own data, if you are on the MDE website, what we need you to do go to the data center. It should be, as you see up there, all the way to your right, and then go to data reports and analytics. And then when you get to data reports and analytics, there's not a lot of stuff on this page at all. So it's easy. No, that was not true. There's a lot of stuff on this page. And you're going to head all the way down to where it says school finance reports. And you're looking for Minnesota funding reports. And if you don't have that bookmarked on your device, I would suggest you bookmark that on your device, because there's lots of interesting information there that you may want to reference for future knowledge about a lot of different parts of the funding source, system. So if you can go to Minnesota Funding Reports, MFR, just make sure you do just the one that says MFR. You're gonna come to a page like this, and this just allows you to find your own district. So what we're looking for here is Marcy has put up her district, West St. Paul. Just leave it at all reports. The category is special education. And we're looking at your 16-17 right now, because 17-18 has not been closed out, obviously. So the last year we can look at to really look at your full data would be 16-17. You're going to click on list reports. It's going to give you a list of reports like this. Hopefully your district is the right district that you've selected. And you're going to go to one that says Special Education Comprehensive Aid Report. So once you're there, you'll be seeing a document that's going to look like the one that we have up here on our screen.
The why behind it is when we ask you to continue to talk about the special ed funding, when we say it's an inequitable funding stream, and the representative says, why do you say that? We're going to tell you how to answer that question. So that's why we want you to take a peek into your data. So what was said before was that in Minnesota, we do it all because we're Minnesota nice. And the initial aid funding formula, we did it all. And so as Dr. Meltzer shared, instead of one student-driven formula, we now have three ways in which initial aid is calculated for a district. This is where the inequities start. These three ways are not predictable, and you cannot adjust to maximize your revenue. So in the past, Renee and I's previous roadshow would be, how do you maximize your special education revenue? And there was universal ways to do that. There is universal ways to use your benefits. There is universal ways to use your third-party billing. And those universal ways are not predictable, reliable, or even the right ways between two different districts. And so when we look at the initial aid, you get three calculations, and you are funded at the least amount of those three. The first one is the way that Renee talked about, the old formula. And the second one, which did not include fringe benefits, the second one is all of our reimbursable and unreimbursable portions of special education. And the third one is our student-based. And I'll go into the student-based a little bit later. As you look at your report, here's how you find your three options. Now, when we do this training for directors of special education and directors of business, we go through it with details. We're not gonna put you through that, all right? Not gonna put you through it. But we're gonna show you, where do you find your lines? Line 10 is option one. This is the old way.
And people ask sometimes, well, how did they do the old way? What you see here is the kind of like, we talk about 68% of salaries, 52% of contracted service, 47% of instructional supplies. Kind of throwing that all into the pot, it comes out at like a 0.62%. So the first of the three potential options is going to be the total, and then multiplied by that 62%.
So for the West St. Paul District, this is option one. Option two is all of your state expenses in special education, reimbursable and unreimbursable, and that has a 50% portion to it.
So that's where your benefits are included in that second one. Benefits and a few other things that weren't included before can now be included in here.
We go into option three. This is your student-based funding formula. Was called census-based. But really what it did is in 2012, the state took all of the IEPs in the state of Minnesota and did an average cost by disability. So what we know is that if you have a student that's identified as needing services under SLD, and you have a student that's identified needing services under autism spectrum disorder, they may be different services. I'm gonna generalize, but majority of our students in autism that are identified under autism also receive speech services and occupational services, sometimes adaptive physical education. So the amount of staff services needed for that student is different. So they took the data from 2012. Now, what do we know about the data in 2012 is that the system in which is called EDRS, in which we put our staff on EDRS based on their license. And you know in your district, depending on your license, you can cross-serve, but someone on the team needs to have that license. And so the data, so then they took people's, so you're on the system as your license, they took that data and said, here's the cost for autism. At that time, our speech clinicians were under speech, not under the kids they served and who they supported, but by their license. So when Dr. Melcher shared that rate needs to be calculated annually and be part of the formula, he's absolutely correct. Because we are using 2012 data to support our student-based funding formula. That's a problem.
And I think this is something that we're going to emphasize as we go through the entire presentation, but it's a good time to do just a stop and main point. We should have one of those like little things of fire or something. But
rings of fire?
Of fire, not rings of fire. I feel like I'm in a ring of fire.
Okay.
So what the point is that, you know, whatever role you're in your district, one of the critical things right now is to have very accurate, clean data. And if you have a new director, newer business people, even people that have done it for a while but haven't realized the repercussions of maybe not coding the information correctly, you really need to dig in. So if you're still coding all of your speech pathologists to 401, which means it's a speech pathologist, you should have some of your speech pathologists coded to autism, because they're serving a percentage of kids with autism spectrum disorders. So their percentage under 401 should just be those speech-only kids. And that's a very different shift for people. It's not the way we've done things. The department has talked to us and told us we need to be doing this, but not everyone has made that shift, which is why this data came out and people went, what? Autism is only, you know, we know how expensive those kids are.
So just to look at this, these levels, if you are familiar with special education, have nothing to do with the federal setting, the amount of time students spend in special education. This has to do with a cost level. So what they're saying is for every student with autism in District 197, there's 117, they multiply it to get this rate. What we look at is emotional behavioral disorders is more expensive than a child with autism. Now, logically, you know that doesn't really make sense, and that's because of the data that was in the system that was tied to licenses, not the students they support.
And when you see here, I'm sorry, the line 30 SMI, that's severely multiply impaired. I mean, those are probably our most kids that are receiving very high levels of service, you know, full-time nurses, lots of related services. And you can see that came in also at a very low level because of the coding.
So when we take a look at the initial aid, here is the census-based and you get the least amount between option one, two, or three. That's going to be line 43 for the West St. Paul district. We are under option one. I have done 1,000 spreadsheets to manipulate myself into multiple options to see if I can just get that penny over, because I want to maximize that option. And if you, what's goofy about the new formula is if you fix something, you ruin another. And so we're very cautious to say, don't do universal ways, because this has been an art to maximize the revenue in this new funding formula. So now we go to excess cost aid. To help support maybe initial aid, we look at excess cost. And now we have two options, option A or option B. When you look on your state aid report, you're going to see option A is line 52, option B is line 56, and then you will determine for district 197, we are under option B. We good? Doing good? Mm-hmm. All right. Now, the other part that is part of the formula that Dr. Melcher talked about was transportation. Transportation used to have a separate funding pot of money, not new money, additional money, but a separate pot of money that supported care and treatment, students experiencing homelessness, and special education transportation. That has now been rolled into the formula. What we talk about in special education is what we know is special transportation needs to have an IEP. Homelessness and care and treatment could be general education students. Our concern is although 100% of your transportation is paid for prior year, this is a prior year part of calculation on the formula, general education students are impacting our special ed formula by rolling this in. And so even as you saw on Dr. Melcher's slides on recommendations, he too, and the recent slide talked about transportation. So where you'll see that is line 60 on your report. So when you hear, is it 100% funded? Yes, your prior year is 100% funded. However, your current year, you may have an increase in transportation needs that is not funded, okay? Anybody experiencing more homelessness or needing for special, anybody? Okay, this is gonna be another plug. Your data needs to be clean. We pulled, the Minnesota Department of Education, Paul Farron gave me the statewide for the past 5 years on special transportation, homelessness, care and treatment, in special education. I have to tell you, the data's got to be clean. As we continue to advocate for a different way of funding and designing a new funding formula, that data has to be separated between special education and kids and students needing transportation for homelessness or care and treatment. The data just wasn't good statewide. Some good. The member in charge was to really make a predictable, transparent formula. This is not what it looks like. And what Dr. Meltzer shared is that, again, the hold harmless and growth limit, you know, that we do need to take a peek at that, because the hold harmless really was that first year of transition to protect a district in making sure they get at least the same amount of special education as the prior aid as the prior year. However, as Dr. Melster also shared, as we move away from that base year, and you are a growing district, you had a lot of students move in with higher needs, and your expenses go up, that's very impactful to that base year in your aid. And so we do need to address that as it moves forward. You've heard about the cap. Anybody heard about the special ed cap? Anybody? Okay.
You will now.
You. If someone says, just get rid of the cap and we'll keep the formula, the answer, that's not right. That's not what we're saying up here. The whole thing needs to be looked at because, again, it started with the initial aid. But what each district has is this individual cap on line 74. So the minimum on line 71D is your hold harmless amount, your base of 2016. and your growth limit, your cap, is on line 74. You can't get less than this. You can't get more than this. What if you are at the cap and you have expenses beyond the cap? They're not reimbursed. They're part of your cross subsidy. So this is the sweet spot, right? And so I haven't got it to the dollar yet.
She's such an overachiever.
Getting close. Right, Dr. Melcher? Getting close. All right.
Marcy, if you were in the census-based formula, if you're a three, there's not a lot you can do there, is there?
No, I think it's really about clean coding of, one, your MARS identifying students, your data, but we're still dealing with 2012 rates. And that's kind of the problem in that funding, that student-based funding formula.
So we're going to play a little trivia. This is not exactly fun trivia, but how many districts are at the cap as of the 16-17 data? Number.
There's 336 districts.
You gonna throw a number out? 336. That's no, we're good there. It's actually 124 districts. So about a little more than a third, that were at the growth cap for fiscal year 17. And that total reduction in aid to those districts was $218 million. So if you kind of have seen those wonderful charts about the growth of the cross-subsidy, there's some, again, there's some disparity because some districts, as Marcy showed, she's right in that sweet spot. I am not. That's why we chose to show Marcy's data, not mine. But some of it is, again, I think the point of it is that there's little that you can really do sometimes other than have your data as clean as possible to control which one you're going to fall in. And then trying to figure out how to, make the best one the one that works for you. And so I think we can kind of see, hopefully, as we wrap up that part, some of the concerns that we're expressing about the formula. So, another trivia question. If you're at the cap, and this year you had more students open enrolling in need of special ed, experiencing homelessness, in need of transportation, in care and treatment, in need of transportation, will you receive more aid to support the increase in transportation expenditures? No. When did districts receive their final fiscal year 17 special ed aid report? Does anyone know when we got that report? I believe we got that report. We're uploaded the final ones in April of 17. And CEDRA was already closed. There wasn't an opportunity to make any adjustments or corrections. And so, again, we're right at that point of closeout for this year, so probably not a lot of opportunity even for 17-18 to do a lot of adjustment, in the next couple of days, because I think December 1st is our
close date.
One
thing that the Minnesota Department of Education did to help districts plan better is they have an interactive model that they've shared with directors of special education and directors of finance to say, how can you predict this? And so it is a model, if you know your numbers, you can predict where you may land in that max, min, the cap, and the hold harmless.
So there's this other little thing out there that's really exciting and fun to try and figure out, as if that wasn't already fun enough and your head's kind of spinning with numbers, and that's tuition billing. And tuition billing is a system that's created because we have kids going to different schools. They're open enrolling into, school districts that are, on your borders or in other places due to foster care or parent situations. And because of that, there's a system that's set up to bill back to the resident district the unreimbursed cost for serving a student that's not a resident within the district that they're being served in. So that formula also plays into some of the challenges with what's happening with the current formula that we just kind of took you through. And I believe, was it just the last legislative, the session, the last biennium where they did the 10%, and okay. So now instead of getting 100% reimbursement for those students, we get 90% reimbursement, and the 10% has to be covered by the district that's serving the student. And the reason that that is there, I think, is to discourage districts from just giving kids with that are non-residents, you know, very high levels of service, just assuming that that's all going to come back to you anyway. You know, so you may have a very difficult parent. You don't want to fight about a one-to-one paraprofessional for a non-resident student, and you say, okay, we're just going to give them a paraprofessional because we're going to bill West St. Paul. And now the serving district does have to cover a piece of that. It also is there to, you know, for charter schools as well. So it covers both the regular public schools and the charter schools.
Just to add, this was part of the recommendation of the 2012 task force in looking at redesigning the funding formula. And it really was, we are seeing increases across the state of expenditures in special education that are drastically different. We are seeing some charter schools at a 20% increase each year in what they're billing, and then some districts that are under 4%. And so there's a huge discrepancy with that, and this was an attempt, and maybe not a big enough attempt, to really try to equalize that District A and District B would have equitable special education services.
So again, just to go back to, I think, the message that we're going to say probably over and over, but I think I heard someone needs to hear things like 6 or 7 times before it kind of connects, but is, again, clean data is really important. Do you know who your non-resident students are? Are you keeping really good track of that to make sure that you know what their resident district is? You know, and it's a thing that maybe in the past we didn't, you know, wasn't as big of an issue, but as we look forward, particularly with kids on IEPs, it is really critical to have that data correct. And I know in larger districts that is a constantly moving target. Will you do the next one, Marcy, and talk a little bit about the memo?
Yeah, so cooperatives and intermediates no longer get 100% reimbursement there in the funding formula like school districts. However, they do bill back their serving districts for that aid. And then there are 3 charter schools, I think it was the 2012, I'm not sure when this came out, but there is a Minnesota statute indicating that 3 charter schools that serve 100% of students in special education receive all of their aid, so they're not subject to the 10-90-10. They also receive any unreimbursed portion of the lease. They do get lease aid, but any unreimbursed portion is also billed back to that district. And so you might have gotten a letter indicating a few charter schools are building, and that will be billed back to resident districts, and that's what that Minnesota statute allows.
And if you're interested in what those schools are, just in case you know they're near you or you get bills from them, it would be Lionsgate, the Metro Duff School, and Sparrow Academy, which is Fraser Center School. I want to go back just for a minute, Marcy.
Yeah.
To the second one here about the cooperatives and intermediates. This long-term could be an issue for districts that use cooperatives and intermediates quite a bit for services for low-incidence students, because if they're not getting reimbursed, then they're gonna pass that cost on to their member districts, because they only exist because of their member districts. So, you know, if they have to have the funds in order to continue to keep their services running, and they're not getting that reimbursement, that could increase the costs to member districts. You know, I know some of the intermediates and cooperatives are really trying right now to hold the line on that for this, you know, the 17-18, but it could, you know, it could be a factor going forward. So if the serving district is at the cap, our wonderful cap again, those 124 districts of you out there that are with me, can they get tuition billing aid for serving non-resident students?
Can they get more aid if they're at the cap?
If you're at the cap. Yep, if you're at the cap, you get no more. So if you are there, that tuition billing revenue doesn't, you know, you're only gonna get your cap. So where does it go? Marcy and I.
Yeah.
We gotta deal with Tom.
No, the aid goes somewhere. And that's part of the whole formula is some districts are getting underfunded, some districts are getting overfunded based on their cap. And so this goes back and is distributed as part of the whole formula, not based on who you mm-hmm. serve.
And I don't know if we have the slide in here, Marcy, but I know when we did the analysis of, you know, kind of the range that districts were being funded at.
It'll come.
Okay, perfect. I was forgetting if that one was down the road.
So how does Minnesota compare to other states? Actually, this was presented by Emily Parker, the Education Commission of the States, and really talked about, as we look at Minnesota, how do we compare? Are they student-funded? Are they staff-funded? Is it a categorical grant? And again, you'll see on the slide, Minnesota's different.
And we didn't put this one together. That's why we love this one. We're
yes.
like, look at us.
I know. We think
it's nice because we're plaid.
Right? If it was red and black, it'd be a little better.
I know.
Yeah. So honestly, because we have those three components, options for initial aid, that's why we look a little different. But as we continue to work on the formula has good components to it. It needs to get better. So I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. There are some really good components mm-hmm. to it. We just need a little more time and a little more money to get this right.
Okay, so another piece that we mentioned, we used the term a couple of times up here, and that's cross-subsidy. And I think pretty much all of the major organizations, and I believe AMSD is one of them, MACE, MESA, have platforms that include language around the special ed funding formula and around cross-subsidy. And so those are big numbers for some of our districts. We were testifying at a Senate hearing this summer, and we heard some of our colleagues out here from our larger districts talk about the size of those cross-subsidies within their districts. And that really means the amount that the general fund is picking up for the cost of special education services. So that is it's a big factor. You know, in my district, we're talking, you know, tens of millions of dollars, and in some districts, we're up around, I think, the $50 million range, and I think was what Ed had talked about in Minneapolis. So there is a cross-subsidy report that you can look at that also allows you to look more deeply, but then on your aid report, there's a way for you to locate that, so you'd be looking at line 78 and subtracting that from line 67. So I think we showed that to you.
Yeah, 67 is your total. Do I have it on the next one? 67 is your total cost of special education, and line 78 would be your special ed state aid.
Mm-hmm. So, if we move, we obviously, you know, I don't know if you have perfect great eyes, you can see this, but as we move. We just wanted to show kind of a little bit about what we were talking about in terms of the expenditures and then the revenues and then the percent of reimbursement. This was the slide that I was asking Marcy about.
You have this in your materials
yes.
online, since you can't see it here. These, we try to gather all of the AMSD districts, and we are not using this because I know superintendents can be highly competitive with each other. This is not what this is about. This is also not about giving the stink eye to your director of special ed or your director of finance.
No stink eye.
No stink eyes. This is an outcome of the formula that still needs work, not the people that you love dearly and see every day. Okay? So, but even in AMSD, we have districts getting reimbursement at 36% and some at 72%. There are times where there's presentations that talks about the state average. That is correct. The state average is what we have seen in the past. That's not what we're debating here. Because what we do in local level is we go into the nitty-gritty of our district. This is our lens, right? And this lens is where the inequities are being shown. And how the formula is benefiting some and not benefiting others. And at the end of the day, it's not benefiting our kids. And so this is what needs to get fixed.
So I think this is a good document to be able to share and to use, you know, as a talking point. Because, you know, we don't want to go, yay, Moundsview, you're a winner. That's not what this is about. Because what we would like to see is that every district, and Moundsview's like, yeah, right.
Right.
What we'd like to see is that every district has the same percentage in some format, that we have an equitable system, that I know if I'm in Lakeville, you know, I'm gonna have a similar percentage or the same percentage as my colleague.
So the biggest thing that we are working with your directors of special education and your directors of finance is clean data. Developing a new funding formula without clean data results in a bad funding formula. And so we want to work together with the Minnesota Department of Education to say we did our part in cleaning up our data so that we can together design even a better funding formula to support our students and a more equitable one. We own a piece of that. And there are many discrepancies currently in data from districts that we are still working on, tuition billing being one of them. How we put our staff on the new CEDRA system, what used to be EDRS, now it's CEDRA, and break that out so we, if we do move to a student-based funding formula, the costs are aligned to the needs of the students. That is really, really critical in making this transition. And we all, it's not just MDE's role, it's ours too. Our data has to be clean so we can do the system together.
And I think, you know, I'm just speaking from the past and being, you know, in the state doing special ed finance for 20 years, you know, it used to be that you could have somebody that worked for you that could enter things into EDRS, and they were really good at making things match, and, you know, everything was zeroed out. And we all celebrated that. I don't know how many of you got excited about that, but Marcy and I really get excited when we, you know, we're like, we like numbers. But, you know, what I want to emphasize is that the complexity of it now really requires people who understand special education, who understand the types of things that affect your funding formula, to be looking at that data. It's not enough to say, yep, oh, a speech pathologist, 401, I put him in at 401, all is good. It's not enough, you know, every decision has to be thoroughly thought through, because every piece of data that's entered affects how this system works. And if we're going to have to operate under it for a period of time, we need to get really good at understanding that.
So what Renee and I and some colleagues from MACE are doing is we are doing boot camps to walk through each district small group, not this large group, but really small group, to walk through your state aid report, talk about how you're programming and funding, and making sure that people understand what they need to do to help the system run better. We also have, are presenting top level things at MESA, AMSD, and MASBO just asked us to do a little something too. We're very active in the legislation. We wanna support changes that are helping our students. And so we will testify. Legislators have been really willing to meet with us to talk about it. And it is really a statewide effort to make a change. It's not anybody else's sole responsibility. It's a statewide effort.
And a collaborative effort, because yeah. I think as Mr. Melchin pointed out, you know, everyone's recognizing that there's some places that we can make improvements.
So be kind to your directors of finance today after you saw this presentation. Be kind to your directors of special ed. And really, it is a balancing act. Every time we make decisions as directors of special education regarding students' needs, we are balancing the student need and the fiscal, and that's part of the system, unfortunately. And so we constantly have to have courageous conversations about, are we doing right by our kiddos?
I think one of the things we're finding as we travel around and do our show, which we really didn't anticipate that it was going to happen that way, but we know there's a need, so we're helping out. We got to spend a little time up in Bemidji 2 weeks ago, so that was a great group. But is that people that are getting into special education director roles didn't get in it to do the finance. They got in it to be able to do good things for kids and to support families and to support their faculty and to do, you know, the work. And sometimes the finance piece is something that I don't think is always a really strong part of some of our higher ed programs. And certainly with this new formula, it's not really in the higher ed programs right now. And so it is really critical that people get up to speed, even though, you know, that may not be their biggest, you know, that's not where they really want to spend their time. It is really very critical that there's that collaboration between the business office and the people in special ed.
it's been neat for us to see legislative platforms from different agencies and organizations all talk about special education. That hasn't happened before, so this is pretty phenomenal that we're in this together. I mean, maybe not phenomenal because there's a reason why we're in this together, but we're coming together, and that's what this is about. This is about our kiddos. So when you think about the funding formula and you go and advocate for it, we need your voice. Your voice is critical. Bring your special ed director, bring your director of finance, but the superintendent voice and the board voice is a voice that's listened to. And so we need you. And we need you to talk about developing one predictable, this is MACE's platform, so I want to share that too, but one predictable funding formula that is equitable statewide. Talking about removing the caps and have an equitable proration factor. We know that they, the state has provided funding for special education on the state side. We know there's not enough, but make it equitable, predictable for each of us, not individual caps. As Dr. Meltzer said, we need to talk about that base here, that limit, hold harmless limit. That is very impactful to some districts, and it will reduce your ability to recover special ed aid. Use current years. We are living in the current. Special education is changing drastically day by day. We need to have current data. And we're really asking for, in MACE, that transportation be out of the formula, that students in general education not impact the statewide special ed funding formula for districts. We're also talking about increasing funding. You heard Dr. Meltzer say what it would take to at least stop the growth of the cross-subsidy. That's at least what we're asking for. We'd like to also go back and look at Minnesota state statutes that exceed federal regulations. We just had a recent one, and I'm going to use this as an example, as FAPE in non-public schools. The outcome of the Minneapolis court case indicated that non-public students have the right to FAPE. In October, information from the program and compliance side of the Minnesota Department of Education gave districts direction in what that means. I don't know if you've read that yet. This is significant. We, in our district, used to, we in West St. Paul, we have 8 public schools. We have 7 non-public schools. St. Thomas being one of them, visitation. We have some of the big non-public schools. They are lovely. School choice, we believe in school choice, okay? But in special education, this interpretation has now limited the parents' ability to access special education services. It's an all or nothing. And it's not that we would want any student to have less than in a non-public environment, but parents make a choice on their educational environment. And what we have done is always made equitable services, but not equal. That choice is no longer there. It'll be equal services. So I want you to think about that and think about how many non-public students you serve. This is a significant increase for our district alone in staffing and supporting the 7 non-public students. And we are there for students. So I don't want you to misinterpret my message as we are not there to support students. But the public agency is the bearer of last resort now. We have, I'm on a soapbox, follow me.
Here she goes.
Here she goes. I waited a while until
I know,
I went there.
You did really well.
But we are the agency of last resort. And we have students, I had a student that I sat by that mama and that child tried to commit suicide and was resuscitated 6 times. The 6th time worked. That's wonderful. The child stayed in the hospital for 2 days. What happened during those 2 days? Why did they stay for 2 days? So they could drink and eat and be discharged.
Medical necessity.
No evaluation of mental health. No evaluation of med management. And that cute scholar came to our doors the next day, and we opened our arms up and loved him up and said, we will provide what you need because we are the agency that provides FAPE to all students. that's the other thing that's not on here. We can't do it alone. We are constantly being asked to do it alone. And we need you. When they say, why does special education cost so much? It's exactly this reason. We are the agency of last resort. And we take that role with pride, with absolute pride, because we love our kiddos. But we need help. Okay. Whew.
Wow. Deep breaths. Way to go, Mars.
We just can't stop. We got to keep having a voice. We just can't stop. So apply this. The last two I'm going to tell you right now might hit a sensitive nerve if what I just said didn't. The last two might. Because when we talk about excessive, where special education is picking up the cost, one of them is in an open enrollment, in transportation of students that receive special transportation on their IEP as a service. A student may, the district that's serving is responsible for the cost of that transportation. Now, we, as you know, and nor would we want to deny any open enrollment student. However, this is getting quite large and costly across the state of Minnesota when school choice is part of it. And so we are seeing across the state increase of open enrolled students asking for special transportation, and the resident district right now is responsible for that. So we're just talking about an equitable. If you open enroll, we'll support school choice, but an equitable to general education students. And then the second one is aligning with the open enrollment law. So in the state of Minnesota, we are not allowed to close special education programs that are for early childhood special education or for our 18 to 21-year-old transition program.
There's no comparable public school program for those students. Those are extended services that are entitlements for students that are on IEPs.
And so we are a district in West St. Paul where we built a lovely early learning center. Thank you, board members. And we have a third of our students in the program open enrolled, and it's increasing. That's how great of a program we have, is that it's increasing. But we now are going to have to build, because we are unable to deny an open enrollment in early childhood special education. And it's not that we are trying to deny kids, but it's getting to the fiscal point of impact where we're going to have to ask our taxpayers to build. And so there needs to be some guidance around that. Whatever that outcome is, we would like it to be addressed and acknowledged. So those are, again, I'll be open and say the advocacy groups are probably not too fond of Mace's 2 points on that. But it is really critical when we get asked by legislators, why does the cost of special education increase? These are components of it that we're talking about.
And I think that's one of the key factors that we've found as we've gone around and talked to folks, is that I have a concern that one of the things I'm hearing and kind of getting feedback on is there's going to need to be a conversation about why is special ed so expensive. That was what the Senate hearing that we were at, that was the main question. They didn't want to talk about some of the other issues. They wanted to really know, why is it rising at such a higher rate than other things? And so we need to have some really key points as to why that's the case, so that the assumption from the public and from the legislature isn't that school districts are using their funds in a way that isn't, either isn't appropriate or is wasteful. And I honestly have never met anyone where I would believe that's the case. Everyone is doing the best they can with the resources that they have. And that's the assumption we have to do. We have to come from that place of positive intent. Everyone's doing the very best they can with the students that we're faced with, rather than the fact that there might be something out there happening that, we could do better. And we always are looking to do better, because U.S. superintendents know that there's always budget challenges.
So share with us in those talking points whatever you feel comfortable. We hope that you have a little knowledge in regards to what that state aid formula looks like. And as we do our roadshow and boot camps, please encourage your finance directors and directors of special education to come really dig into this with us so that we can make greater changes. Thank you.
With that, we have a few minutes to take some questions.
Everybody's just completely, whoa.
I think we just did a knockout job that you have no hope.
This weekend, MSBA's Delegate Assembly meets, and six of the resolutions address special education. Have you seen those resolutions? Maybe not.
I have not seen those resolutions.
I have had a chance to take a look at them, yes.
I don't know if you can comment on them individually because I can't remember what all six of them are. I know it addresses transportation and it addresses the
cross subsidy.
And it addresses the difference between the state and the federal requirements.
Yeah.
But I think I would say to my fellow members of the Delegate Assembly, you need to talk to your special ed directors and finance people real quick before you go over there on Friday.
I think that would be great, and we really appreciate the opportunity to have board members here because I do think that that organization is also really critical in understanding what's going on and being able to speak to their colleagues.
Okay, I certainly support all the recommendations, and I understand the cost of cross-subsidy. But I guess I would come back and say, okay, what's the price tag on this and where can the money come from? Because you can make these, but you have to have a plan as well.
Well, I think either way, they're gonna come out of the general fund, right? And so how that looks in regards to, let's say, transportation, right now for general education students, if they can come to our border, we will transport them in as we do our other students. That's one thing our district is doing. And so we would say the same in regards to special education. We already have the buses out there. It's making that, 40-minute drive outside our boundaries for one kid that is causing the issue. So when you have that economy of scale that you can bring them on in, that's a little bit different.
I think it's more of a cost savings in some of those places than just additional money. However, I think going back to, there's always gonna be a finite amount of money, and our previous speakers talked to that. But I think one of the critical elements for us is also going back to that idea of equity, and that we don't wanna have this array of winners and losers. So even if you're going to have, this is how much the legislature gives us to spend, having a formula that creates that kind of inequity where there's what we consider kind of winners and losers, I just don't think that's the way we want to do business in the state of Minnesota.
Right, I agree with that as well. But I also see that there is value when talking to our legislators about being able to say how much something costs or how much something can save, whether it's the wow factor of, my God, how I didn't realize that it was that much, yeah. Or, gosh, if we can save that, certainly we're gonna support it. So,
we do need that.
As opposed to just make the recommendations are great, but if we've got some data
dollar figures,
that.
Yeah,
and I think when you're talking to your legislators, the statewide averages are not useful, right? You're telling your narrative, your story. So it's really important when you come and talk, so for our district, I have those numbers of how many students we are transporting outside our boundaries for open enrollment. That's the message in the context of our district's fiscal arena that is really important, that it's not a statewide, because when you go to statewide, you start seeing averages that look like, well, that sounds okay. It's not about the statewide averages. It's about your narrative in your district. And that's the message when you're meeting is, to bring that personal data forward. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Have a great lunch.